You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome to In Defense of Humanity. My name is Ingrid Castle. I will be your host this evening. My co-host, Anita, carried the show beautifully the last 2 weeks while I was on a road trip. And our show is called In Defense of Humanity. And for any listeners that are new to our program In Defense of Humanity is about helping people wake up to the wondrous and endearing qualities of our own species, while understanding that the current commercial legal structure that both government and business is built upon is actively working to take control of most organic life forms on our planet. So restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that we understand what has happened while empowering ourselves as living men and women. And we have generally focused our shows on the corporate commercial legal system. And I want to make sure that everyone knows that the book that we are recommending for people to get kind of a Reader's Digest version of what happened is Lawfully Yours. And that is at Al's website. It's anticorruptionsociety.com. And at the top of the page, you'll see a tab for Lawfully Yours. And it's a free download, or you can get actually a hard copy version from Vaccination Liberation, but she has a link there. So I would encourage people to get some background because we're going to be going right into that next week. But this week I wanted to invite a special guest and talk about a special topic that's very important to me. So I hope everyone had a fabulous Thanksgiving. By the way, this is November 28th, just right after Thanksgiving, and I hope our listeners are all ready to gear up for whatever is important to them, which certainly to me would be freeing our country from this corporate commercial legal structure. Many people heard the news about our veterans going to be coerced into getting every vaccine on the adult immunization program schedule, and in lieu of benefits. And I think people are rather appalled. So we're going to probably be talking about that in the near future because, you know, there's certainly the vaccination notice, but I've asked people if they know, if they've seen any of the recent contracts that people that join the armed forces sign, because these contractual relationships that we have certainly can bind us in a way, especially if we don't restrict our signatures or, you know, sign these documents without prejudice. It's very important that we restrict our signature and that we're very careful about anything we sign. But anyway, there's always solutions to any problem. We just have to dig a little further. But without any further ado, I wanted to go ahead and tell you the topic tonight, which I have several people really anxious to hear this interview because it is really important and I don't think it's covered very much. It's going to be about diagnostic ultrasound, what you likely don't know about its dangers and why that is so. Diagnostic ultrasound is a diagnostic technology that uses ultra-high-frequency sound waves to create echo images, usually of the fetus or the unborn child. This is a standard procedure for nearly every pregnancy in the developed countries. And its origins lie in sonar technology by which submarines are detected by echoes. And as an aside, many people think the beached or stranded whales that are washing up on our shores, that's, you know, from Fukushima. And actually, there is much evidence in the book War of the Whales that that is actually from this technology that our military is using in the oceans. Ultrasound is said to be harmless. However, few understand that ultrasound has always been controversial and political, with known hazards indicated by animal and cell studies. The practice of ultrasound continues, and it's rationalized by the claim that there are no human studies to confirm the known hazards. However, hazards have most definitely been confirmed. to give you a little bit of a background, my radio guest, which I'm going to be bringing on real soon, I wanted you to get as excited as I am about having him on. He has been a friend and peer in the vaccine awareness movement with me for many years. Jim West is going to be our guest, and I want him to be able to share with our listeners the release of his latest research in book form on ultrasound titled 50 Human Studies in Utero Conducted in Modern China Indicate Extreme Risk for Prenatal Ultrasound, a new bibliography. Jim West is probably best known internationally for his research on the history of polio, specifically the pesticide connection for the incidence of polio. His research has led him to see the fallacy of the germ theory of disease in favor of the environmental precursors underlying all illness that we are seeing today. His research has been continually cited by other researchers who have been exposing the truth about SARS, West Nile virus, and H1N1, as well as polio. Jim served as chairman of the science committee for the No Spray Coalition, which successfully litigated against the city of New York over the helicopter pesticide spray programs there. And to check out his research for yourself and what we will be discussing, go to his website. It's, you have to spell this out. It's harvoa.org, harvoa.org. So welcome to In Defense of Humanity, Jim. It's an incredible honor for me to introduce you to our listeners.
Well, thanks for that great introduction. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you on. I've been, on our road trip, I was anticipating this interview. I planned this out with Al, my co-host, and said, you know, how about you take off Thanksgiving weekend because I really want to interview Jim. He sent me a copy of his book, and I am fascinated with all this information. You know, you basically highlighted 15 of the 50 human studies, and I kind of wanted to know what was your criteria for choosing 15 of those studies, because it's absolutely fascinating.
As everybody knows, or has been told, ultrasound is harmless. That's the official statement we always get. If you look deeper, you'll find that it's all rationalized on the basis that even though diagnostic ultrasound has been shown to produce physical effects in tissue, there is no evidence from human studies that it could cause any problems. However, that's the golden standard that keeps us from banning it.
Right.
So I began to hunt for human studies, and I think I just put a lot of effort into it. And my research with DDT, polio virology, and all that gave me an advantage. A research advantage, and I ended up finding one study that was human study that nobody talks about, and then in the footnotes, that led me into more human studies, and then in the footnotes of those, it led me into more, and pretty soon I had more human studies than it was incredible. It was like a gift from a researcher's gift from heaven, a medical critic's gift.
How did you find these? I mean, they're not normally on the internet. So how did you actually? You went from one to another. But I mean, if I were to research this on the internet, I wouldn't find them. So
right. Well, this is I was heavy into DDT, polio, pesticides, and polio, and I have a book out on that that's been out for a long time, as you mentioned, where I found environmental causation for the great polio epidemics. So that led me into connection with the really heavy HIV/AIDS critics, because they're also into virology and criticizing virology, like Anthony Brink in South Africa, and Klaus Jensen and other people, and it led me into the whole technology of virology and how to critique it. And that, and part of the critique of virology is, well, what they call the electrophoresis. That is an electric version of chromatography, where everybody knows that in order to analyze chemicals, I mean, it's common, it's fairly common that if you put any chemical on a blotter paper or some absorbent paper, you'll see that it spreads like water and oil will spread. Mm-hmm. And you can get an idea of what the chemical constituency is. And so there's an electronic version of that called electrophoresis, where they run electricity through the blotter paper, but which is actually a gel in the more sophisticated version.
Right. Well, I you know, for most people, actually, we don't even know what chromatography is, a very sensitive type of chromatography. So what can you,
right.
just explain it a little bit for us.
Well, chromatography, it's basically putting a chemical on a piece of paper and watching how it spreads out, and you begin to see the different components there. You know, like the fat will separate from the oil.
Oh, okay.
Right? And anybody who's spilled, you know, like milk or something on paper, you see it sort of spread out where the oil stays and the water leaches out through the paper quickly. So that's
right. That's
a basic method of studying chemicals in chemistry, in biochemistry. So they actually use a more sensitive version of that called electrophoresis, where they use electricity to accelerate the separation of the chemical components. So they can study DNA with this, and they can break up DNA, and they use it for DNA fingerprinting, like the O.J. Simpson case. They used electrophoresis to analyze his DNA, right, and compare it with the DNA found at the crime site. So this is a great technology, which I understood, and I figured, well, this is somewhere, there must have been some ultrasound scientist who exposed cells to ultrasound and then used electrophoresis, this chromatography, to analyze what happened to the DNA. So I just started searching like this, and this is what the edge I had, the research edge. And sure enough, a study popped up, and that's Jinyin Zhang, a Chinese study, which was published online in 2002. And it's like a pristine, beautiful, modern study, very sophisticated, written perfectly. There's no reason why it shouldn't have been the talk of the town, but nobody was talking about it. There's no discussion, no nothing. So that study, which showed that ultrasound at very low levels fragments DNA in the fetal area, had these footnotes. And in those footnotes, there were many studies like it. And that's how it branched out. I branched out into about 50 human studies showing damage.
Okay, so it answered my question. When you were choosing 15 of these 50 studies, it was primarily, was it the electrophoresis? Is that the way it is?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So basically when they were using this in the study and they had a clear, you know, sample, you know, a decent sampling, you know, where they had the, what did you call it, the sham of,
right, the control.
That had the control, right. So they had the control, and then they had all of these other aspects, you know, the different exposure and intensity, and then they, you know, and they used this type of analysis. That was a huge determining factor for the 15 of the 50?
I chose the 15 out of the 50 that were the most eloquent, that were the most decisive. There are others that are, they do find ultrasound damage, but they're not as distinctive. They're still valuable, and they add to the power of the findings. For one reason, probably the main reason why I didn't choose all of them and work on all of them is just be a lot of work because I had to translate these. And then I had to know enough about ultrasound, the science of ultrasound, to be able to analyze what they're doing and comment on it and evaluate it. So 30 of the 50 studies are about the same thing. So there's no point in repeating those.
Exactly.
And that topic that they, the 30 of them were on was the chorioamnion region, which is this dual membrane that separates the mother from the child, from the fetus. It's a membrane around the child that's called the chorio, and then the amnio is the amniotic membrane. And the two of these serve with what they call the chorionic villi to transfer nutrients from the mother where at the junction where the child is joined to the uterus in the mother. There's a nutrient and waste transfer area there. But this chorioamnion membrane is they chose it they would expose women, pregnant women, to ultrasound, women that were volunteering for abortion, and they would then abort the child, and they would analyze using sophisticated scientific analytics to understand what happened to that tissue. And some of the women, they would pretend to give ultrasound to, but the machine was switched off. And other women, they would use various exposure levels, as you just stated. And then they would study, say, 25 women or 100 women. And then they would analyze the tissue of every woman, and then they would categorize the results and their findings based on how much ultrasound each woman was given.
Wow. It is really mind-blowing going through the book. There's a few questions that cropped up as you're talking. Well, you know, because they also measure damage to the brain, kidney, cornea, and the immune system, too, in these varying studies. And what I found incredible was that the damage was shown at such low intensities and, and not that high of exposure rates. And I wanted to tie that into the FDA intensity limit, and if you could discuss that a bit, you know, because in 1991 it increased, what, eight times? And it's just amazing. But, you know, we're coming up on a break. It kind of came real fast for me. I was so fascinated. So if everyone can stay tuned, you're listening to In Defense of Humanity with my guest, Jim West. I really appreciate you doing this, Jim, but I wanted to ask, you know, there's so many things about these studies. I mean, it was the span was, what, 1988 to 2011 with the Chinese human studies, 50 of them. But how comprehensive were they? I mean, was it like stages of, you know, right after conception all the way to like, you know, 6 months? Or what was this whole span of these studies?
They were extremely comprehensive. They studied the ova, the egg of the mother. They studied the embryo, which is just the right after the sperm and the ova join, and they begin to evolve into a real fetus. They studied the very, very young fetus, like 6 weeks from gestation to 8 weeks gestation, and they studied all the different, in some studies, they studied all the different trimesters, the first, second trimester.
Okay, so what was the intensity? What was the intensity of most of the studies? You know, so we can compare, because I mentioned the FDA and them increasing the levels in 1991. I kind of wanted to know, you know, for our listeners, the comparison of what our standards are to the studies that they did and the low levels of intensity compared to anything we're doing here.
Right. Well, up till 1991, if anybody born before 1991 was luckier than those born after 1991 in terms of ultrasound intensity, because in 1991, the FDA officially allowed ultrasound machine intensity limits to rise by a factor of 8. And this was in spite of studies already established that show that ultrasound can damage tissue and probably does actually damage the fetus. But because there's no reports and there's no human studies, no epidemiological studies, and nobody's admitting that there is a causation, it's allowed to continue on. I like to quote one authority who's an expert on ultrasound, and he's hooked up with the industry, and he's an insider. His name is Douglas L. Miller, PhD, and he says that safety assurance for diagnostic ultrasound in obstetrics began with a tacit assumption of safety allowed by federal law. So it's just assumed to be safe. It's never been proven to be safe. Everybody admits it's never been proven to be safe.
And there were no in utero, in the Western scientists, you've stated really clearly that there are very few epidemiological studies which are subject to bias, and there's virtually no human exposure studies.
Well, virtually. There's a few human exposure studies, but they're not well-focused. There's a study by Dr. Mark Ellisman in San Diego, a neurologist, a neuroscientist. He did a great study that found a lot of problems with ultrasound at very low intensity levels. And his introduction refers to other studies where they did an overview of the hundreds of studies that have been done. And they found that they for some reason lack the proper focus. They're improperly designed. The observations are improperly summed up and evaluated. His study was done to solve that problem, and his study is out there online, Mark Ellisman, 1987, and yet nobody's talking about him. They all avoid him. Any study that shows a problem with ultrasound is avoided. It's not discussed seriously. They may pass it off, pan it, or whatever, but they will not seriously confront the study. And so studies were like this when they raised the intensity up 8 times. They raised it to, I'm going to use, just to say this technicality, it's called the SPTA parameter. It's a way of looking at the energy that comes out of ultrasound. I'm just saying that. Nobody has to remember that. But it's measured in milliwatts. You know, everybody knows what a watt is. It's a measure of power. Well, a milliwatt is one thousandth of a watt. And so they measure in terms of milliwatts per centimeter squared. That's the intensity on the fetus. And the FDA raised the allowable intensity for a fetus in diagnostic ultrasound to be 720 milliwatts. And before 1991, it was 94 milliwatts. And Mark Ellisman came along and did a rat pup study, which emulates the human fetal situation of the pregnant woman, and he found he could create damage at 0.135 milliwatt, and so that's a huge difference.
Oh my gosh!
Of damage found versus intensity allowed, it's hundreds of times, and in some cases thousands of times, because they actually go far over the 720 in certain situations. Up to 9,000 milliwatt has been determined to be the exposure on some fetal brain cases. And yet, there's not a single authorized case where they have ever determined that ultrasound has ever caused any damage. And they claim that, well, you know, it would be obvious if ultrasound was really dangerous, it would certainly be obvious. Well, what do you think autism all over the world, you know, we have 11% of the population in the United States having ADHD and about 2% having autism. These all very well could be the result of ultrasound. So I would say all the red flags are there. They really have no excuse, but right. It's continued because there's no official admission of causation.
Right. Well, you say right in, you talk about Synergy, and you say on your website, Jim's ultrasound causation model is fully compatible with the vaccine model as it includes the concept of toxic synergy, and it's a powerful synergistic ultrasound capable of initiating fetal vulnerabilities to subsequent toxic exposure. So the risk of subsequent exposure to vaccines, birth drugs, antibiotics, and other stressors are not additive, but actually multiplicative. You know, I mean, you're multiplying the toxicity, much like Russell Blaylock talks about.
Right.
So you're having that foundation. You know, the first assault is the ultrasound that's fragmenting DNA as well as, you know, causing, you know, necrosis to the cell. Is that what you would call it?
Right. It's killing cells, and it's breaking the membranes of the cells so they cannot protect themselves from toxics that they may encounter, such as antibiotics and pharmaceuticals and vaccines, the chemicals that are in vaccines. They cannot protect themselves. And this lack of protection is not just it's not just a matter of adding the two problems together. Ultrasound has a synergistic effect where it has been determined in bacterial studies with antibiotics that ultrasound can increase the damage that antibiotics can cause by a factor of 100. It's interesting because if they do ultrasound on some cells and then expose it to antibiotics, they get a 100-fold increase. However, if they reverse it, poison the cells with antibiotics first and then do the ultrasound, It's additive. It's an additive toxic situation.
Ah.
So that proves that ultrasound is really opening those cells up to a vulnerability to any other stressor, chemical stressor. Because it's 100 times, it's just amazing. I don't know if we could directly apply that to the human condition, but I believe we can because When they do a study on bacteria, it's not the cell of a fetus. It's not the cells of a fetus. It's bacteria, which are smaller. But the evolution of the biological cell is thought to come from bacteria. And if you look at the organelles, the little organs inside a cell, they actually have proven that those that evolved from bacteria. So it's really a very valid study when you're studying the effects of antibiotics on bacterial cells. I think you can, obviously you can move that to a human cell, that
right.
Those findings. So the synergy, I think focusing on synergy, ultrasound toxic synergy would, should revolutionize the anti-vaccine debate, because here is a factor that people who claim that vaccines are good have not taken into, they think they're safe, they have not taken into account ultrasound.
Absolutely.
So,
and this is another thing too. You mentioned we were talking about, you know, watts, and you know, there's, you know, a lot of people don't understand all this technology, but there are many listeners that actually do. But you have here that humans ordinarily are capable of hearing sounds of the range of 20 to 20,000 cycles per second, or hertz. But ultrasound for fetal examination carries a frequency in the range of 3 to 9 megahertz, millions of cycles per second, above the EMF frequencies of the AM radio band. I mean, that is so unbelievably shocking to me, the levels that we're exposing our unborn children to.
Well, the frequency is not the intensity. That's just to say that it's a higher frequency. Anything above 20,000 cycles per second, or 20,000 hertz, is considered to be ultrasound. In other words, if it's above the range of human hearing, it's considered to be a higher frequency. That in itself is not necessarily dangerous just because it's a higher frequency. But to defend ultrasound on the basis that, oh, it's just sound, is totally incorrect, because this is so much different than regular sound. It's just, you know, it's like, it's around 3 to 9 million cycles per second. At that frequency, you're having some very quick changes happening. There's a lot of pressures that are very unusual, that nature has never encountered, that it's unable to handle. The pressures are incredible. Dr. Ruhl Feng describes ultrasound as having local nano and micro temperatures of 5,000 degrees centigrade. It's almost like an atomic reaction. It's really, we're talking at the molecular level, the stress.
At the molecular level. Now, what intensity would you be talking about, and what duration?
Very, very low. A diagnostic ultrasound can create these instantly. Instantly, it's creating these temperatures. These temperatures are fluctuating because we're talking about the nano world. We're going into the chemistry of the cell. And ultrasound is used in industry to destroy chemicals and to emulsify chemicals and to clean laboratory equipment. It will rip the dirt off of glassware. They use it for cleaning, and it's one of its major uses is for destruction. Now, it's the intensity levels are, you know, higher than they are, but, you know, it is known for its ability to destroy. And if you look at just a low-powered humidifier that uses ultrasound, people may not know this, but they use, they sell humidifiers, and they use ultrasound to change the state of water from liquid to a mist, using similar technology as you would with obstetric ultrasound. And I don't know the intensity levels that they're using. It just shows you what ultrasound can do. They defend it, claiming that it's like ultrasound is like a bat call, because bats use ultrasound, but it's not true. The frequencies are different. These are electronically produced. These are square waves, where nature uses smooth sine waves. They're smooth rolling wave patterns, and the pulsed ultrasound comes out of fetus as a square wave, where it's instantly on and instantly off, thousands of times per second, packets of ultrasound waves in the megahertz are then thrown at the fetus. So it's really getting two sets of waveforms. Now they have 3D ultrasound, where they use several different frequencies at the same time in order to generate as many reflections and as much information from the fetus, so they can create images of better quality.
Right. So, of course, their goal, the industry's goal, is better quality images. But I'm looking at this whole, when you said the sine wave is square, that just triggered to me, you know, like from watching Resonance Beings of Frequency, and a local girl did a little documentary just showing, you know, the Wi-Fi and the, you know, our whole radioactive universe now with cell towers and Wi-Fi being blasted everywhere, that it's also a square sine wave. Is that correct?
They can be. I think that Wi-Fi is basically, I don't know what Wi-Fi is. I assume it's a sine wave.
Well, the girl did a lot of research, and she pursues a short documentary. I'm sorry, a girl, a woman. But okay. Anyhow, a female. But anyway, it was a square. She illustrated the sounds, having the square sine wave, and how in nature it has a very smooth up and down, you know, much like, you know, the tides of the ocean, you know.
Oh, so you saw another study where somebody got
it. Well, it was with Wi-Fi, and so when you said that, I just couldn't help but connect that, you know, this is a man-made thing that's contrary to what you would encounter in nature, as you were mentioning. You know, they wanted to compare it to bats. Well, bats, you know, they use a whole different thing. It's more attuned to the natural, you know, biological frequencies and everything of the planet, the resonances of the planet. And these man-made frequencies are very, you know, disturbing to us biologically.
Well, I went on the web here, and I did find a lot of references to square waves. It's a sharp, a square wave has a sharp corner to it, and that's what's
right.
Alarming to it.
Yes.
About it. So that is inherent in some aspects of ultrasound. But, you know, regardless of the technology, what really counts is the results that these studies, the human studies, are finding, which is damage. They're finding neuron damage, kidney damage, thyroid damage. It's just cellular damage. You know, a part of the defense of ultrasound is done by snowing people with tons of technology and tons of mathematics, trying to theoretically prove how safe it is without doing the proper studies and by not doing human studies. However, human studies exist, and human studies show, and they're modern studies. They're not from some unrelated era. They're modern studies. They're showing a huge amount of damage, and they're showing it consistently. It's like basically what they're showing when we talk about intense, the damage to any tissue comes down to two things: the intensity of the exposure from the ultrasound and the length of time of that exposure. So it's the same thing as when they tell you how to cook a turkey. You got to raise the temperature to the right intensity, and you have to do it for so many minutes.
Right.
In other words, 45 minutes or an hour in the oven at 300 degrees. And that's how you roast a chicken. Well, that same information is now available to us on how to roast your fetus. It's at a certain temperature. It's not a temperature, though. It's at a certain ultrasound intensity at so many minutes. Studies are finding damage, and this can be formulated as an exposure value. Just multiply the time times the intensity, you get an exposure value. Just like when you're cooking a turkey,
it's,
you can multiply the temperature times the length of time it's in the oven cooking, and that gives you an exposure value. And you know, you can have a lower temperature and more time, or you can have a high temperature, a shorter time, but they have the same result, and it can be formalized. And that's what I've done in this book. I've taken these basically what they call a toxicological formula, intensity times duration. And I compare the studies with the actual clinical situation. It's very obvious. You know, it's ridiculously obvious. The only thing that amazes me is that the officials are not talking about it, you know.
Right. I find it really shocking, actually a bit scary. I mean, you likened this imaging technology actually supplanted to a large extent, you know, x-rays. And that earlier technology that, you know, we have been shown as hazardous using x-rays because it was carcinogenic. However, it took decades for that to become public, and now we have, you know, the whole thing happening with ultrasound, and how much longer is it going to take for people to finally, you know, wake up and say, this is at least as harmful, if not more so, than x-rays.
This whole conundrum is, you can find Dr. Robert S. Mendelson, the famous doctor who was the former head of the Head Start program and the chairman for 8 years of the Illinois Board of Hospitals. He has an Esther Thaler put together a video interview with him where he talks about this very issue on YouTube. And he's very eloquent. And he's very funny. He can talk about the most horrible things in a funny way, you know. He's a good reference for people to listen to. He talks, he says ultrasound is just like when they had x-rays in the shoe store, you know. It's just like a fluoroscopy when they would put your child up in a theater screen of continuous x-ray. And he says doctors knew then that x-rays are damaged, but they continued to do them. They admit they knew. They admit they continued to do them. And he says this is going to be the same thing. And he quotes some studies that says that what they already know. So, but the odd thing is that, when they sell ultrasound to people, they usually say, this is not x-rays. This is ultrasound. Ultrasound is harmless.
Right.
And however, not only is that not true, according to these studies, which I think are definitive, they just are not recognized by industry. But there's a conflict of interest here. But the link between ultrasound and x-rays is also interesting on a technical level, because several studies have found that ultrasound is not that much different from x-rays. They like to say, well, x-rays is ionizing radiation, and ultrasound is non-ionizing radiation. So that makes ultrasound safe. But it's not true. Obviously, it's not safe if they're using it to mix chemicals and create emulsions and destroy stuff. But the thing is, several studies have found that ultrasound actually causes the damage that they only notice in x-ray damage. Mm-hmm. So it's not that different. It is actually creating similar damage to the cells.
I can see that it is. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to not respond. I was thinking about that because a lot of people think, well, it's not radiating, and this non-ionizing radiation it is. But, you know, when I first thought about the whole idea of ultrasound, I was opposed to it just for the simple fact of the way it was developed, you know, based on the sonar technology. So I always felt like, my gosh, the baby's in a water sack, and it's like an intense tidal wave, and I've heard of spontaneous abortions happening after ultrasound. You know, I figure it's an incredible shock to the baby, you know, from doing the sound waves in this tiny water sack. That was my first clue years ago that something was wrong.
Yeah, and women have noted vaginal bleeding after ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, actually, that's true, too.
Uh-huh. And they've reported this now. The medical system claims that these are rumors. It's not really true. Studies have proven that it doesn't cause vaginal bleeding. But the Chinese studies, I don't mention this in my book, but I have read in some of the studies where they show with each increase of ultrasound in their studies, they're noting more and more and more vaginal bleeding.
We'll continue after the break. You're listening to Jim West on In Defense of Humanity. Okay, welcome. Welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. My name's Ingrid Castle, your host, with our guest, Jim West. And Jim, before the break, we were talking about x-rays as a comparison to ultrasound, and I know you had a lot more to communicate about that. So go ahead and, talk some more about that.
Well, around 1981, at Columbia University, a researcher named Doreen Libeskind and Robert Bases and a few others there as a team, they did these studies on ultrasound and cells. These are very focused studies. And they found that approximately one ultrasound session was equivalent in damage to hundreds of chest x-rays.
Wow.
And that it produced similar damage when viewed under the electron microscope.
Okay, what intensity would that be?
Her intensity, it's hard to get a handle on it because she didn't use the what has now become the standard measuring parameter, but it was within the ballpark of possible obstetric ultrasound intensity levels.
Because the Chinese, see, that's the whole thing. The intensity in Chinese modern studies was so significantly lower than what the standards are in the West.
Right.
So I'm curious, right.
The Chinese use very low intensity levels, and they simulated a regular ultrasound session. Whereas this Columbia session, she did not move the transducer, the thing that emits the ultrasound. She didn't keep moving it around. She just stuck it right on these cells using water as a simulation of fetal fluid. She then radiated these. But the reason she did this is she wanted to compare x-rays against ultrasound. She wasn't, you know, there is a relevance that can be determined, but she just wanted to show that ultrasound and x-rays are not different. They're not that different. And she succeeded.
But a hundredfold, I mean, this is a hundredfold, oh no, a hundred chest x-rays, you said, was
hundreds.
Equal to
a couple hundred.
A couple hundred chest x-rays, the damage that would cause would be equal to
one ultrasound session. Now
we're
there's
talking like 30 minutes or how many minutes? I mean, you know, it's just like, it's such a shocking figure. I know anyone listening is going to want to know, you know, like, well, what's one session equal to? Some of this information is so shocking. If you missed the first hour, I'd encourage you to definitely get to the archive at indefenseofhumanity.com. You can go to HARVOA, that's HARVOA.org. And if you forget that, you can go to my website and look in the keyword index under ultrasound, and you'll find all this information there also. And my website is, as most people know, Vaccination Liberation, short for that is VACLIB.org, and it's very comprehensive. So with that said, let's go ahead and clarify some of these comparisons to x-rays and the ultrasound, because I'm pretty sure there's some other people here that have some of the same questions I have.
Well, the idea that ultrasound is so bad, and that it's like x-rays, according to some studies, it seems so bad, and it seems so amazing that one could be tempted to dismiss all this as hysteria. However, if you look at the emerging diseases that have been accelerating since 1991 when they raised the levels of ultrasound, we're looking at autism at approximately 2% as an incidence, and we're seeing ADHD at 11% as a rate. So there is something happening, and ultrasound, you know, the human studies that I'm presenting in this book nail it as far as I'm concerned. It's a slam dunk. You know, I'd be glad to argue it. I guess arguing it in email is the best. It just does seem, it seems fantastic that something so bad could happen. But This world is not lacking in such horrible things, if you look through history.
Right.
So what better place for somebody or some system that has a monopoly control to begin than in the fetus, in the womb?
Well, and what's so horrible is that we do have this system that is based on the sicker you are, the more diseased society are, the more money is being made. I mean, there's no money in a truly healthy human being. And a truly healthy human being is also going to be thinking outside the box and doing a lot of things that threaten the control the banksters have on us. So it all kind of seems to go together, you know, to create this weak society that, you know, is a slave race to their end goal. But, it's, you know, talk about a conspiracy. This is like hitting our progeny in a huge way. And it's so amazingly shocking. I mean, I had to reevaluate, Jim, so much of what I had thought to be true. Because I'm always, when I'm encounter a problem in life, I want to find out the root of it. I want to know the cause, and I've been a researcher like that for a long time, and I've understand, you know, the problems with fluoride and aspartate and vaccines and, you know, even MRIs and, you know, CAT scans and, you know, everything medical, but this does not seem to hit anyone's radar screen. And I was told by a friend recently that this kid, I was surprised the woman didn't spontaneously abort, but that they were just doing constant ultrasounds for, you know, possible suspected medical problems. And she was just astounded at the battery of ultrasounds this little infant was exposed to, and just, you know, doesn't even want to, you know, deal with the, you know, telling the parents don't want to know. They don't want to know. I mean, it doesn't matter that, so the child, is not going to be vaccinated. But every other toxin in that child's world is going to be multiplied. It's not additive, it's multiplied. So living near a cell tower, going out in public, you know, being in an area where there's Wi-Fi, which is all in our schools now, getting, you know, exposed to aspartame and MSG and anything. So it doesn't even matter that she's not being vaccinated. There's going to be so many other problems.
Right. Just to accentuate this idea of synergy, an emerging medical technology that's been emerging for the last 20 years is what they call the potentiation of antibiotics. For instance, if you have a prosthesis, like a embedded stainless steel bone or pins or whatever, these tend to become infected over time. And so they have to be cleansed. That's one example. And one of the emerging technologies is to use ultrasound to increase the power of the antibiotics to kill the bacteria in those areas by focusing ultrasound on these areas and then applying antibiotics. And they find that they can then kill the bacteria much stronger. That's because the ultrasound is damaging the membranes, the cell membranes of these bacteria. And when you realize human beings are also like bacteria, we are composed of little cells. A fetus can suffer the same consequences.
Let me just interject. From the Human Microbiome Project, they said we are just encased microbes. I mean, our whole body, that we're just teeming with microbes.
Right,
you know,
right.
Our skin is just a shell for, I mean, that's really what it is. It's just a bunch of microbes, which, you know, are really, in a sense, different variations of cells, in a sense.
Right. We're basically a cooperation of many, one-celled or subcellular life forms. There is, research in, Israel that's been going on in just the recent years at the Technion Institute, which is a very prestigious technological institute in an area of it's similar to like Silicon Valley or whatever in Israel. And Intel has its major factory in Haifa, Israel, where this institute is. And they've been studying ultrasound from an engineering, a bioengineering viewpoint. They've done studies in 2011 and several studies afterwards where they have determined that they can create cellular damage at exposure levels that are 38 times less than the FDA allowed exposure to a fetus. 38 times
less. I'm thinking fractionally, you know. So this is like,
it's like 2% or 2.5%.
2.5%.
The 2.5% of the exposure.
That's the FDA from of what it is today.
Yeah, what it is today. What the FDA allows. Okay. Well. Right, what the FDA allows, they can produce at 2.5% that allowance, at that, you know, the total exposure at 2.5% what FDA allows, they can create damage to cells.
So
let me
ask you a question about that too. It is another shock and awe. So this damage is occurring across the board. Obviously, to anyone that has any kind of ultrasound, because, well, this is the other thing. There's no one that's really going in and monitoring these ultrasound devices to make sure they're calibrated right. I mean, there's no one, we don't even know if they're calibrated to below the FDA limit or even above. We really don't know.
Well, and they're supposed to submit, declarations of their intensity levels when they put these machines on out for sale. They have to submit papers to the FDA. But when you read the guidelines that the FDA gives to the manufacturers, it's surreal. They say you must, you don't necessarily have to submit the papers if you keep them in a special drawer and designate them, for possible inspection.
Wow. So they really don't want to know.
It's like they're inviting every mistake that they could possibly get by making it so easy for anybody who wants to build an ultrasound machine and put it up for sale. The whole thing was called a fast track. They want to make it easy for technological advancement. They don't want to hamper manufacturers with safety concerns. So they just basically legalized the belief that ultrasound is safe. There is not a rigorous review of machines. Machines just naturally go out of adjustment. They break down, and they need to be recalibrated. But that's not being done in a regular fashion or a regulated fashion. Operators are not. There's no operator training that's enforced, and there have been numerous polls of operators where they. You know, questionnaires where they ask them, you know, what do you know about safety issues in ultrasound? What would you do? What buttons do you push to try to ameliorate those safety concerns? And most operators don't know about the safety issues properly. They don't know how to even push. They don't know what button to push on the machine.
Well, usually you go to some kind of college, right, to become an ultrasound technician. So none of these things are taught in these courses to become certified to be a technician. Is that right?
Well, they are technically taught safety concerns, but even the safety manuals, the chapter on safety that is supposed to be in every a manual for these machines, it states things like there has never been. Any damage ever found. But just to be safe, we're going to pass this. You know, there's never been any damage, but just to be safe, here's a chapter that you can read. And then they say, be careful not to have too high intensity. And then at the same time, they say, but don't let that detract from your effort to get a good image.
The image is a priority, and the higher the intensity, the clearer the image is what I'm getting. Is that right?
Right. They get a little better image, not a super great much better. It's not that much better. They can get good image, great images at low level, low intensity. But the thing is, if you're working and you're in a competitive, capitalistic, you know, atmosphere where you're trying to make a buck and you're trying to be the best ultrasound operator on the block, you're going to tweak that up to get a little clearer picture because it's almost 5 o'clock and you got to get out of here. You're going to put it to the max because nobody's telling you not to.
Right. And I think it's, I want to just state something that you had on your website and, by Professor Ruo Feng. Feng, is that how you say it? The highly esteemed
right.
world-class ultrasound scientist you cite, he says, after all these studies, he says, commercial or educational fetal ultrasound imaging should be strictly eliminated. Ultrasound for the identification of fetal sex and fetal entertainment imaging should be strictly eliminated. For the best early pregnancy, avoid ultrasound. And this is at low intensities, and this is in China.
Right.
And that's pretty, that's like a wild divergence from anything where even, I mean, there's no safety at all here.
Right.
No even
well, that,
concerns.
Yeah, that's a common statement. Even in the West, that's a common statement that the entertainment ultrasound should be eliminated. He's actually mirroring a common belief, but nobody knows that, you know. The public doesn't know that.
And it's done routinely. So what do you suggest for women that are pregnant now? I mean, if they're going to a doctor, even if they go to a midwife, we have a midwife here, it's routine. I mean, any midwife uses ultrasound. What would you tell a woman to protect herself? How should she handle it in herself, you know? I mean, how is she going to say, I don't want to have any ultrasound, and then the midwife says, well, I can't, you know, take it because this is my diagnostic tool. I mean, what kind of advice do you give to people?
Well, the problem is you can't expect people to, you can't tell people to just turn their whole life in a dime. I guess the disclaimer right now, even before I talk, is that, I'm not a medical professional. So if you need medical advice, you have to go see a doctor. And I really hope women do go to see a doctor. I hope they bring the book to their doctor and say, and read it before they take it to the doctor and then say, doctor, you know, how do you address this? How do you address this? What do you say to this? And I hope they then hear what little their doctor knows about the safety of ultrasound or how little.
You know, Jim, yep, this is exactly what I recommend. Anyone that encounters someone that is their doctor or professional that is not aware of information that you have, that you spend some time educating them and get a dialogue going.
Right. Get a dialogue with your doctor and make sure you know what you're talking about. You know, read the book a couple times over and over and over, and then go talk to your doctor, and that'll wake you up right there.
Yeah, go ahead and tell everyone the book again. I think that's important, and how they can get to your website and access the book and the fact that it's ebook and all that.
Well, if you can't remember the details, just search Jim West Ultrasound. Otherwise, just go on Amazon.com, same thing, or Harvoa.org. You can find it. That's... And there's
and
literature
have,
on my site. You can read.
Three ways. That's right. You have a lot on your site.
Yeah. So information's out there. I have a extensive review of the material. And there's a lot of material about a lot of different people out on the web also. Although my book, I think, trumps by far anything that's been out there so far. That's the reason I had to write this book, is I could not convince people with the prior literature. I had to come up with something
Absolutely.
Stronger.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's definitely the most definitive stuff out there on ultrasound. I want to know, what are some of the responses to your book by, you know, like scientists and certainly the industry? And, you know, I know many readers are supportive, but, you know, there's scientists out here that in the West that have been, you know, backing this technology. And the American Institute of Ultrasound, you know, certainly they know your book is out. What's the reaction?
I assumed I would get no reaction from any scientists whatsoever, and I'm pleased to say that I've gotten, there are some scientists out there who know. I have some quotes from them on my website. They have done the studies, and just to talk about these studies, it's
okay. Hold on,
right?
I obviously jumped right up to the commercial break. So hold on, you're listening to Jim West. We'll answer that, and then we'll take callers. Thanks. Welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. I wanted Jim to go ahead. Jim West is my guest. I'm your host, Ingrid Castle. But I wanted Jim to finish out his thought just before the commercial break on the scientist reaction in the West. You know, people like the American Institute of, what was it called? Diagnostic Ultrasound. I forget what it was in your book. But
American anyway. Institute of Ultrasound and Medicine.
That's right. Yeah, Ultrasound and Medicine, AIUM. So what was that? And then we're going to go ahead and take the caller that called in. Thanks.
So several scientists have expressed to me support scientifically. They sent me papers. They've praised my courage because it is a tough topic. It's, the scientists, I believe, are just locked up. They know if they... It's obvious because of the way the industry ignores any study that finds ultrasound to be a hazard, that there is a lot of political pull out there that makes it difficult for them to be real scientists. But I have had some heartfelt thanks from the scientists, and I reciprocate to them. You know. There is also an ultrasound operator who connected with me, a real veteran, and she described how her hand, the one that holds the transducer, has vasculitis, the dysfunction of the vascular system in her hand. And she wanted to know if there's any studies that, that could help her understand that. And I have several studies I sent to her. In fact, it's, at the recent, one of the recent AIUM conventions where all the scientists get together and industry people get together, one of the major themes was, damage that is occurring to the hand of ultrasound operators.
Wow.
So.
That's incredible. So,
yeah
they're obviously aware that this, your book is actually extremely timely. I'm going to repeat it again. It's 50 human studies in utero conducted in modern China indicate extreme risk for prenatal ultrasound, a new bibliography. Now, that's really long, so Jim says just go to his website or do a search, Jim West Ultrasound, and you can find him. Jim West Ultrasound. The website is Harvoa, HARVOA.org.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
You know, welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. We're at the last half hour of the show, and Jim West is my guest, and we're talking about ultrasound and his newly released book, 50 Human Studies in Utero Conducted in Modern China Indicate Extreme Risk for Prenatal Ultrasound. It's been an absolutely fascinating discussion, Jim. So to me, what's so shocking is, as we were talking about the commercial break, is who you haven't heard from. You know, I mean, because, you know, this book's been out for how long now? Has it been 3 months yet?
Since May.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And so I didn't even realize it was out there. With Sherry Nawkins' list, it alerted me. Jim, I wish I would have known earlier. So who, what category that uses ultrasound have you not heard from that has surprised you?
Well, what really surprised me is that midwives are not communicating to me or asking questions. And also I go on like a major website called the Thinking Moms website, which is a beautiful website where women are talking about ultrasound, and they're talking about vaccines.
Right.
And they're testifying their experiences. You know, these heartbreaking experiences where they go to the doctor.
Yeah, the Thinking Moms Revolution. I mean, they're big. Uh-huh.
Right, right. And I'm on there, and I'm, you know, I introduce this, and I say, look, a lot of them are wondering, you know, a lot of them have no, are already convinced by their own personal experience that ultrasound damaged their child, and others are convinced that vaccines did it, and others convinced that combination, but they're a real angry, thoughtful, intelligent group of people who are there talking. And,
right.
So I'm a member of that forum, and I pipe in, and, I'm always surprised that the ball gets dropped real quick. Like, somebody will say, well, what proof do you have? And I'll go, well, here it is. Bump, bump, bump. And then it's like, well, there's no more conversation, you know? And,
well, because I think it's a set shock. You know, I actually think it's so horrifying. I don't think people are going to want to know how bad it is. Because when you discuss the synergy, you know, and you just, I mean, we're talking about extreme cell damage and DNA fragmentation and so much incredible damage at the cellular level. That's the foundation of your baby. It looks perfectly well on the outside, born, and then the vaccines come. The vaccines are like, they can't handle that assault. And then it's, you know, all, you know, the Hep B at birth, it's each thing. So it looks like it's the vaccines.
Yeah.
And the ultrasound has set everything up for extensive damage.
Well, you know, when you come up with something this strong, evidence that's as strong as I have, it's sort of a conversation killer because they don't know what to do with it. You know, the conversation could go on forever and ever when people go, you know, my doctor told me this, and I did this, and my baby has autism, and then people commiserate with each other, and this is a cycle that goes on and on and on in the forums.
Right.
It's never like, okay, we've got something strong. How do we go to the next step? Is it going to be? But there is no next step. It just dies. You know, I think. Maybe political activists understand how this works, but I don't want to really be a political activist so much. I just want to, I want people to start thinking and talking for themselves. I want them to read,
right.
And I want them to learn the minimum science that I'm putting out there, which is really simple. If you just read the sentences over and over and over, it's dry. It's not a chocolate coated, exciting thing, but read it and get this under your skin and then start talking to your doctor, talk to your midwives, talk to each other, talk to your friends, and develop the ability to start, you know, to talk about it. But I'm just amazed that, well, midwives are not talking to me. I figured they'd be emailing me, but the situation, the political situation of a midwife, I realize is a little different than it was maybe 20 or 30 years ago.
Oh, they're totally working for the state now. I mean, they will get fined if they don't give the state excessive detail about the parents and, I mean, all kinds of personal information. They're supposed to milk all this information out of the parents, you know, not just, you know, their level of education, but how much debt they have. I mean, it goes on, and it's quite detailed. We got that from a friend of mine who's a midwife. And she will not practice in my state. Idaho actually started licensing midwives, I think it was in 2008, and we wrote a bunch of articles about it. It was horrifying to us. A lot of midwives left the state because of it. And
wow.
it's very difficult to have a baby on your own. I mean, it isn't actually. I mean, I actually have books and I'm actually very much into that. But for a first-time mom, to tell the first-time mom everything's fine, you should just go ahead and do it by yourself or your husband, I mean, not for a first-time mom. They're going to want to have a professional, and they just are in this type of climate.
Well, and they should be communicating with women that have done this successfully. They need
right.
to find these people, hopefully in their area, and start talking. People are so busy trying to make the extra buck and trying to survive and buy the new car or the new house or whatever, or just survive whatever people are doing. It seems like they're strapped to the wall and they don't have time to think and talk about things. And the midwives are locked up.
They're locked up. So many doctors are locked up. This is why it's important to present this information to them, just to protect yourself. You want to know the calibration of their machine. You want to, you know, see if they'll work with you if you are healthy and you don't want any ultrasounds. I mean, I remember my own daughter when she was pregnant. She didn't have any, ultrasounds, that showed that it was a girl or a boy or anything. She didn't want anything like that. And I was really proud of her and glad that the midwife was not requiring that kind of thing. But it's becoming more and more common that they want that, like, to protect themselves should there be any problem. And
I've heard,
the problem with the ultrasound and they're unknowingly.
They're not determining whether the problems that ultrasound is detecting are not the problems that ultrasound is creating. So there's this huge thing about how wonderful ultrasound is because it's detecting so many problems, but almost all of those problems, malformations, implantation problems, eye problems, et cetera, well, there's not a lot you can do except maybe have an early abortion. I mean, even if you do detect a lot of these problems.
Right, exactly.
And there's a lot of studies that have shown that even if ultrasound was perfectly safe, it doesn't, the net benefit is not worth having ultrasound. There is no net benefit. It doesn't, it's not a clear image. Usually the images are pretty bad.
Right.
And they create a lot of misdiagnostics. They create a lot of excuses for invasion because the doctors really can't tell what's going on when they look at ultrasound. But this thing where everybody is locked up, politically locked up by these wire pullers, all in laws and insurance laws and regulations and Obamacare, is all just locking people up into this medical system. It's the ultimate government is the medical system. I think there's a new law being passed for midwives where it's based on the dilation during pregnancy. If it, as it reaches so many centimeters, they have to make a phone call to the hospital.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I just remember in my past, as a back lab, there was a woman in Georgia who was really kind of panicking because there was a lot, there was no midwives are allowed in the state of Georgia. And she did not want to do the more she started finding out, she certainly didn't, she fired her doctor, she didn't want to go to the hospital, all of those things. And so I was in touch with her and she was, she was African American, probably hips made to have children, but she went ahead and had a friend and her delivered it. The father was apparently out of the picture and she, anyway, everything was fine, but the state wanted to go after her for that. And she says, well, I wasn't able to get there. Everything just happened so fast, which is rare for a first, it was not a good excuse for a first time mom. Usually you don't happen that quick unless it's the second or third. But she was harassed and so frightened, she ended up going all the way up to Washington, D.C., where she actually got a good job. She was quite well educated and everything, but she couldn't get out of the state of Georgia fast enough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's how scary it is to have children. And I don't know, right in your own city, did you hear about that, where a newborn with the umbilical cord still attached was put in a manger at a church, you know, a nativity scene.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, you know, it's. I think it's so scary to have children today with CPS and all these other things that it's causing more anxiety and fear on a pregnant woman than ever, ever before. And it's, you know, I would love to have that baby now. Can you imagine? She probably secretly was pregnant. Maybe nobody even noticed. Maybe she was overweight. But, you know, that baby probably didn't have a bunch of ultrasound.
Right.
Probably a few that haven't, you know. But
there is a woman named Sinead McCarthy who has a website called Sacred Maternity. I did an interview with her, and she is a young woman who had her own child at home with her husband, and she did not get harassed. She managed to escape, and she's very proud of that, and she might be a good connection for a lot of people who want to know more about natural birth. The whole issue of doing anything like no vaccines or natural birth requires people to socially connect up with people who know about these things. You just can't, the political issues other people have already thought about and already worked this out. And if you have to prepare yourself politically and technologically, if you're going to give birth, if you just think, oh, I'm going to have a baby and my doctor is so and so and my doctor told me this. Well, you're giving a lot of trust into something that I think I've made pretty clear. It needs to be questioned.
Well, they're certainly not accepting any liability. I mean, this is just across the board considered safe, and there's no studies that really determine the damage that is going to be that visible initially after a birth, unless they're doing repeated ultrasounds, and then they can always blame it on something else. That's the real problem.
Well, this is the liability, but it seems like if we're going to talk about solutions, like what can a woman do, you know, to improve her situation? It's nothing that you can just quickly change your life. You have to change your culture, make friends that are more confident about natural birth. Because I think natural birth is probably one of the major solutions to this, because the system is always going to try to get to you. They're going to try to find a reason for invasion, medical invasion.
So it's important that you have a solid relationship with your partner, because it certainly takes two working together to bring in healthy children. And then the other thing is, you know, you want to have a natural childbirth between you and your husband, and you need to be able to agree on all this stuff very clearly before conception.
Right, because if something goes wrong, you don't want one party blaming the other.
Exactly. I deal with divorce stuff all the time, and it's just ugly. In fact, you know, I wanted to just thank you so much for being on our show, Jim, because I think it was an incredible wake-up call for many of our listeners, and I really thank you so much. And I'm going to be recommending the archive, because I want, you know, people to hear this straight from the horse's mouth, as they say, you know, because this really will blow a lot of people away. I find a lot of people don't read as much as they used to in the past, so I want to thank you so much, because we're going to go ahead and do our visualization. We usually end this program with a visualization of the world that we want to create, and Al has put together a beautiful 4-minute visualization, and we do want to actualize a new world. You know, they always say when there's an increase in darkness, that's also when the light starts coming in, and that's increasing now more too. So, you know, it's it seems like there's a lot of darkness, but there's also a lot of good stuff that's going on, and we want to increase that through our intention and creating the world that we want to be. So visualize that we're going to have healthy babies free from ultrasound, and that you are able to go out there and share this information with people that are unaware. It could be an ultrasound operator, it could be your midwife, it could be your naturopath, it could be your doctor. So make sure you share Jim's website, harvoa.org. That's harvoa.org. And thank you so much for being on this program, Jim. It's just been an amazing journey for not only me, but many of our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you, Ingrid.
Yep, and so repeating the book again is 50 human studies in utero conducted in modern China indicate extreme risk for prenatal ultrasound, and 15 of these studies are highlighted, and you can go to the website to get more information, more detailed links to many of these studies. So it's quite comprehensive, and he also is an expert on the DDT connection to polio. So thank you. We'll be in tune next week, and it'll be the Al and Ingrid Show on In Defense of Humanity next week. Hey, thank you.